Okay, I'll run that by you again. What you want to do is, first of all, your fact pattern has to be that you have a company, or, and the company, I'm being very simplistic, but you have to have a company that has a shareholder loan, or you put some money into the company at one point, or you have investments without any debt against it, okay? Then what you do is you sell the investments. I'm going through the investment side of it. You sell the investments, take that cash, buy your house. Then you mortgage your house, take that money, buy back the investments. Then the direct use of that money was to buy the investments. If Revenue Canada ever asks, no, I didn't take a mortgage out of my house to buy the house, I used it to buy the investments. That was tested in court by a small family in Canada called the Bronfmans. Anyone heard of them? Okay. So the Bronfmans took it all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada. Unfortunately, they lost because they had done it incorrectly. They didn't go through those steps that we talked about, and essentially they just tried to deduct interest because they said, well, you know, we should have substituted this versus this, moved the shells around, and should have been deductible interest. But the Supreme Court said, no, what did you use that money for? Simple question. And if you used it for investment purposes, deductible. Simple. Company is more complex, probably beyond the scope of what we'll talk about today, but it can work. Principal residences. And I'll touch upon later about Americans owning Canadian real estate. There are lots of owners of Whistler condos, houses, etc., and they're facing a massive tax bill, but a very nice problem because they've appreciated in the last 2 years about 100%. So, anyone heard of Whistler here? Everyone heard of Whistler? Okay. So the principal residence exemption. The great thing in Canada is that there is no dollar limit to what qualifies as a principal residence. The definition of a principal residence is a house plus up to 0.5 hectare. Anyone know what a hectare is? Okay, it's about just slightly over one acre. So you get the 1 acre. But having said that, there are exceptions to the rule. It can be larger than 1 acre if you're in, a non-urban area where there's large farms. Because there's a number of court cases that have come down where they said, well, gee, the minimum lot size is actually 10 acres on my 50-acre farm. So therefore, Revenue Canada said, okay, well, you get your house plus 10 acres. So that is a huge win in terms of being able to defer the tax or to save the tax. So the good thing about the principal residence exemption, you don't have to declare it on your tax return. There is no form to fill out in Canada. In the States, you do have a form to fill out. And you just have to basically say it was my principal residence and you never pay tax. So it's the old game of buying the real estate, growing, building your equity, moving up. That's how you build your millions. A lot of people ask the question about having a basement suite or a home office. As long as the basement suite or home office is an ancillary use, an ancillary means that it's not really the major use of the property, then you will not have to worry about that affecting adversely your principal residence exemption. You'll be able to deduct or not have to claim the whole amount and not have to declare the whole amount. The last one on changing use is a Canadian tax rule. There are people who will buy a property, rent it, then live in it, and then sell it, or vice versa. They'll live in it, and then rent it, and then sell it. Well, there's actually a little known tax rule out there. I'll give you a section number, 45(2) and 45(3), doesn't mean anything. But those two tax rules enable you to extend the period of your principal residence exemption by 4 years. Okay? So maybe you decide that you want to live in an apartment, live in town or something, and you sell your acreage out in the country. Well, you can actually rent that for the next 4 years, and you still won't have to pay tax on any appreciation for the next 4 years on that property. How many people have read the pamphlet, Saving Tax When You Change Use, from Revenue Canada? That's not out there. Okay, Alberta. It is the tax haven of the north. Alberta has the benefits of oil and gas, tar sands, and lots of wealth. No sales tax. I love that when I go shopping. And they have lower tax rates, and I think they're going down because they are going to balance their budget, the first Canadian jurisdiction to do so. I think they're balancing their budget in about 2 years, thanks to, well, I don't know if Mr. Klein is necessarily responsible for that, but he can take full credit, I suppose. But he's done all the right things, and so their tax rates, and this is good for the Americans too if you're planning to come to Canada, although it snows a little bit in Calgary. I remember very well, I was actually speaking at the Freedom Investment Club in May 10th, I think it was, and it snowed about an inch that day when it was sunny here in Vancouver. So. Oh my. Okay, don't say that. That's not a good PR thing, that it's snowing right now. So, tax rates. It's a much lower tax regime in Alberta. It's relatively comparable to the States then. And that's the misleading thing. One thing I'll point out for those who come from America, the misconception is that taxes in the States are significantly lower than in Canada. Well, for those from California, I think those rates are pretty comparable. If you add on your FICA, which is equivalent to our CPP, and your SUTA, which is equivalent to our employment insurance, they don't call it unemployment anymore, but employment insurance, the FICA down in the States is running around 15%, both sides. In Canada, it's around 9%, going up, mind you, but it's comparatively, I think they're going to go like this. You'll see that FICA is soon going to be much like a tax. It's probably going to, I don't know, it may go up to the 20s, who knows, because it's basically a zero-sum game. The money in equals the money out, just because of the aging population boom. So Alberta certainly is advantageous, and what you want to do is try to earn your income in Alberta if at all possible. There were quite a number of schemes. These differentials previously were much larger. The Alberta rates have stayed pretty much the same, but in BC, they were as much as 54% on income, about 27% on capital gains. So I actually had some high net worth fellows that cashed out in the dot-com boom. We set up an Alberta entity for them and saved 7% on their capital gains of, in their case, it was about $20 million of gains. Well worth it. Going offshore. This is my last one. Going offshore is not for the faint of heart. You have to make sure you're doing it for the right reasons. One of the biggest reasons people do go offshore is to protect their assets. And what does that mean? If there is risk of your assets being attacked or being litigated and there's a settlement against you, there are certain jurisdictions you can set up offshore where it's beyond the reach of creditors. Okay, I'll give you a quick story about why you may not want to go offshore and keep it completely secret. I have a client whose widow, or she's a widow, sorry, and her husband was a fairly successful or quite successful stock promoter. They had the statements showing that there was about $2 million of equities in an account in Switzerland. They had the number of the account and everything. So she took her death certificate, went over to the Swiss bank, and they said, "Where's the secret number?" And she went, "What secret number? I've got the account number. I've got the death certificate. I've got my lawyer next to me." They said, "No secret number, no money." So that's a dividend to the Zurich bank, I suppose. But that's the pitfalls of secret money, because it has to be secret. And frankly, I don't want to know about it, because there's now new rules for accountants that are, they're joint and several. We're basically in your shoes as much as you are. If we acquiesce or we are part of a tax evasion, do not pass go, go to jail. So don't really want to do that. So it's a fine line. No, it's not a fine line. It's black and white between tax avoidance versus tax evasion. Okay? Tax avoidance, you can certainly set up down in an offshore jurisdiction. We have done that. You still continue to pay Canadian income tax on the income, but you're beyond the creditors. So we do have people that want to be beyond creditors. Having said that, there are appropriate uses for offshore vehicles. We're just currently working on one, and have done it in the past, where a person has a trading business. If you have a business that is completely offshore, meaning that you're buying offshore and selling offshore, nothing domestic, and this applies both in Canada and the US, it's probably a very good shot at you being able to access this 2.5% tax rate. Barbados has something called an international business corporation. International business corporations have to qualify, they have to meet certain criteria. If they do, then you pay 2.5% on your income. The benefits for those who are in Canada is that you can take that money back, the 97.5 cents on the dollar, and bring it back to your Canadian company without any further tax. So now you've got 97.5 cents in your bank account, better than the 17% tax rate, and spend it as you so see fit, other than taking the money out of the cookie jar. In Canada and the United States, both governments have put on fairly onerous reporting for offshore assets. This is quite different. Canada just introduced it in 95, and the United States has had it forever, I think, pretty well a long time. The compliance ratio is very low, is my understanding. Not that many people are actually filling out the forms, but the penalties are onerous if you don't fill them out. And foreign asset reporting is different than an income tax return because you're actually just reporting the assets themselves. So whether you've set yourself up in some exotic trust, company, some other exotic vehicle, all of those are now reportable. If you have an article that's dated pre-January 1st of this year, throw it away. Okay? Because the rules in Canada, the US rules have always been onerous and have always been around. But in Canada, the rules changed on January 1st of this year. And the hurdles are this high to try to create some really exotic tax structure that will get you around the reporting rules. Okay? The lawyers are working on it as we speak, but I haven't seen anything yet that can get you around those technically. So they have these foreign asset reporting. What are the penalties if you don't report? 10% per year that you don't report. So over the next 10 years, I think it goes up to 20% after one non-reporting year. So they basically take back your asset after about 6-7 years. So, in summary, when you think about taxes, and they are relevant in business, they always are going to be relevant for at least the foreseeable future, you got to plan ahead. Think about where you want to be 5 years from now. Your tax plan can accommodate that. And just because someone's doing a tax plan, it may not necessarily be for you. You have to make sure it's appropriate for yourself. Okay. Unfortunately, the tax rules always change, so you may put a tax plan into place. You have to tweak it. You have to revisit it every so often and make sure that it is going to be appropriate for the time. And lastly, make sure you get good tax advice. Okay. Don't get it out of a pamphlet. Don't talk to your neighbor necessarily. You can get some ideas from your neighbor, but that's not necessarily going to be the tax plan for you. Make sure you do get good tax advice. So that's all I have today. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. I've got 5 minutes for questions, so I'll take two or three questions, and then we'll have to move on.
We Canadians have been convinced to throw the maximum in every year into our RSP, which is 14.5. So every year, 14.5, 14.5, whatever it's going to rise to. I don't know what the Americans have been talked into. I played golf with a couple of guys this summer who were senior guys with a big Canadian company who I won't mention, except they're from Winnipeg and it begins with I. And they said, watch how much you put into your RSP, because the time it comes to start pulling it out, you may have some big tax hits, whether you run them through RIFs or annuities or whatever. So are there any tax implications of maximizing for the next 20 years our RSP? Is there some, are we going to be hit with something we don't expect because there's hopefully too much in there?
That's a very good question. In terms of taking it out of your RSP, it is a tax-deferred vehicle, much like your IRAs and Roths and 401ks. So you pay tax coming out of the plan. Having said that, IRAs. But having said that, there are ways to minimize your taxes on the way out I'll give you one quick story. There was a fellow who we gave some advice to. He rolled some of his shares of a small public company at the time. It was trading about 25 cents. Rolled it all into his RSP. And that stock went to $120. And his RSP is now at about 18 million or 20 million. The simple plan there is to go offshore with your RSP, because there's no tax when you go offshore. And you go to a nice place, Ireland, where they play golf there. And you can take it out at about 15%. He hasn't heeded our advice. He's quite happy. 18 million for him is good enough. So he's not doing anything. But in terms of tax, yes, you do ultimately pay tax at the end. You just tax defer it through the piece. I think one editorial comment is when the government sees 10, 20 years down the road that there's all these trillions of dollars in deferred pension assets, they may say, let's start taxing them. So beware of that. That's why a lot of people say, well, maybe RSPs aren't the right thing. I think there was a question over here in the back.
The problem with the holiday there you were suggesting in the beginning, can you have a general, annual general meeting on that boat and take the tax refer?
The question was whether or not you can take your annual general meeting and have it on a boat. Well, I know both governments take a very dim view of boats. They take the same dim view of golf courses and of fishing lodges. So unfortunately, it's not. Okay, question in front here. Right. So the question was going outside of the U.S. to go travel for a course such as this, that it would qualify. I'm thinking more along the lines of those less than appropriate, say, vacation / business trips. Okay. Thank you very much again.
Our seminars are tax deductible, right?
I would say they are tax deductible.
There you go. How do you like that? Great job. Thank you. Great job. Excellent work. Come on, applause. Come on. Where are you guys?